welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Our team of experts discusses good animal handling practices and some potential facility shortcomings in part two of this three-part series. Our guests include Dr. Lily Edwards.
I am an assistant professor here at Colorado State University in the Department of Animal Sciences. So I've been here for just over 2 years. I do research and teaching, teach a veterinary animal welfare class. I teach an applied food animal behavior class and then an animal welfare evaluation class.
And PIC's Brandon Fields.
Brandon Fields, manager of the Applied Meat Science Group, basically working with our technical services to the further processor, slaughter plant, and integrated customers, from everything from the animal handling transport through the meat quality audits and operations inside the plants.
Along with Chuck Boer.
I work in the tech services, wean to finish. Been doing that for the last 3 or 4 years. And before that, I worked in our research side doing on-farm trials.
We've talked about moving pigs. When we move them, we're thinking 5 or 6 head, no more than you can keep and manage. What's a good rule of thumb?
You need to be able to have some fairly direct influence on the lead pig. So once again, it's a function of size of pig with the walkway. In most of our settings, it's 3 to 5. Narrow walkways, it's probably going to be 3 or 4. If you have a wider walkway or a fast alley, you may be able to move quite a bit more given the circumstances. That's one of the differences between plant and farm. The walkways in the plants are much wider. You move a larger group without stressing them out because you've got more space. So in a farm setting, unless they've got really wide walkways, it's going to be a 3 to 5 group. More than that, all you can do is push the back pigs, to push the middle pigs, to push the front pig, and they're all stressed out.
Once they're in the aisle, there's not really much you can do with line of sight as far as what area of the pig you're which way you're wanting the pig to move, so you stand from this area. But in the pen, when you're cutting out a pen or when you are sorting pigs, that's a place where you would really be able to do some things with knowing that they can't see straight behind them. They got no rearview mirror. How do I position myself in order to get them to do what I want them to do? Is there a rule of thumb for that?
Rule of thumb, you need to be a little bit to one side, and then based on, once again, we think a lot of flight zone, we think of, you know, individual pig is going to behave a certain way. If I'm on the pig's left, he's going to tend to go to his right, and vice versa. When I have a group dynamics makes that a little more muddled, but it's remembering too that you have a bubble around you. You know, you have a personal space that the pigs don't want to get into. And what frequently happens when we're trying to move the pigs is someone thinks they're far enough away, and they're not. So their bubble, their space is blocking the path. And that's whoever, when you're taking pigs out of a pen, you typically would have one person towards the gate. You had a goalkeeper, a gatekeeper, and you have someone bringing the pigs towards them. Well, that gatekeeper doesn't have to be physically blocking the gate in many instances. You can back off, and you get too close, and although you're not physically blocking it, the pigs don't want to go because you're too close. And learning, you know, where you need to be and how your positioning affects those pigs is one of those nuanced things that takes time, it takes experience, and it takes doing it wrong a few times, and that didn't work, and keep working at it.
Dr. Edwards, how do we teach that?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think it's taking time, and I think we don't always take time that we need. I think we value training. I think we know it's necessary, but I think when we think about our lives and we think about the day and we think about filling a position, we say don't rush, but then I don't know that we don't rush ourselves. So I think it's showing them the video clip of when they did it right and when they did it wrong, or having them paired up with another experienced employee and having that be their job for a little while until they kind of get the hang of it, and giving them the tools that they need. So I, you know, listening to that description, I think the other thing about space is making sure we even give them enough space to work in. Because sometimes we fill a pen totally full of pigs and don't give any working space for ourselves or the animals.
Great point. Time of day. So we're talking about things that have to do with people's ability to do things in a restful, relaxing manner, because the pigs are going to pick it up if there's tension or stress. That truck needs to be loaded by such and such in order to get there by such and such. As we think about the types of activities that we can do before we go load hogs that are stressful or not stressful, I mean, how do we help our barn help that is going to be actually loading the truck, or the truckers, how do we help them go into that in the right frame of mind when, you know, they've got a full day in front of them?
I think one thing you see in some places, it's quite common in Latin America, more than North America, you'll see it a bit here, is dedicated load crews. Their job is nothing but go site to site and load pigs. They're experienced, they're trained, that's their mindset, and that's the only thing they have to worry about. Whereas the regular barn crew now can focus on the pigs that are not leaving the farm, whatever their daily tasks are. I do believe that has a big benefit when you can apply it. Beyond that, I it's a great question, and I'm not sure I have a foolproof solution other than, you know, back to the training of the individuals, that just so they understand when you are calm and relaxed, that whole process goes smoother and you're not going to get as worked up or stressed yourself, much less what you end up doing to the pig's level of stress. When you take it easy, calm, and just go into it with the right frame of mind.
So do we, in the U.S., do we often have dedicated load crews, or is it kind of dependent, or is it that not something we do as much? Do you know?
It depends on the system.
I
mean, you have some. We have a lot of producers. If you think Iowa, you have a lot of contract producers. You know, they're grain farmers, and they have pigs because they want the manure. That is a side job for them, not their principal, and they may hire someone to do it who doesn't know much. So, I mean, it comes into that. But I think the key in all of this is, if I were going to stress anything, would be, be patient, think like the pig, and remember that you've walked this a lot. He came in, and this is he's only been there once before, and it was in the opposite direction. So it's new. You know, for us, we get impatient because we know the route. We know, you know, it's we can walk it with our eyes closed, but the pigs don't. It's new to them. It's scary to them. It is an inherently stressful event. We can't eliminate it. Our job is to minimize it. I mean, we just have to understand that, and I think patience with ourselves and with the pigs is the hardest thing, because it's, I mean, I've been doing it for years, and sometimes I just have to stop, take a deep breath, and okay, here we go again.
So here's a concept, right or wrong. We have dedicated people in the farrowing barn, and usually they are people of the right temperament to do that. Is that what we need when it's time to move pigs?
I believe it is.
Yes. At this point, when we're sending pigs out, and we're talking slaughter animals here, we have 100% investment. We've got everything into it. We're about to get a return on that investment. And when we mess it up there, you know, we lost it. It's gone. You know, we don't get paid for that pig that doesn't make it into the process at the plant. It should be a big incentive, but it isn't always.
Dr. Edwards, other than an overt physical injury, what are some of the ways that we pay for poor handling when the pigs reach the harvest point?
Yeah, there's injury, obviously, and that would be a loss of the total animal if it's, you know, a bad enough injury that it shouldn't make it through the process. Bruising is something, and to be honest, there's not as much research focus, like published research focus on bruising in pigs. So I'd be interested in kind of hearing what others have to say about the prevalence of that. It's a huge deal in cattle. It's studied a lot more, and I'm guessing maybe the prevalence is a little bit higher. So they kind of go together. I think if we look at other quality impacts, there is an impact on meat quality when we look at animal stress. So PSE is the big one. And I think there's a lot of research showing that relationship between immediate pre-slaughter stress and the outcome in the meat.
By far the biggest thing you're going to see is the stress effect. Lily mentioned earlier when we stress pigs, when they jam, when they back up, when they vocalize, they're increasing lactate. You can directly measure that. An increase in lactate is directly related to a lower pH of the meat, which is getting toward that PSE condition that she mentioned. You know, it may not be fully PSE, it might be RSE, which is red soft exudative, still unacceptable. So you end up with the direct moisture losses on the cutting floor of the plant. The overt broken bones. System dependent, of course, but definitely there are times, and I've seen challenges with bruising on pigs. I agree, I don't know of any great published research, but, you know, anecdotally, observationally, it definitely exists. Again, fortunately, you don't see it too much in this country. We've really pushed animal welfare considerably in the last 15, 20 years, and you see the benefits overall. But, you know, beyond that, if you think about the worst case of all, we stress that pig to the point where he actually dies. And back to Chalk's, you're 100% invested, and I just realized zero, as opposed to a bruise, a broken limb where it may still be able to be killed or harvested properly, meat quality issues where you're going to be all some percentage. A dead pig is zero value. And so that's by far the biggest concern.
Lily, can you walk me through the process when you go on farm of the kinds of things that you look at that might give you insight into areas for possible improvement?
I think flooring is a big one, and I'm thinking probably flooring a little bit more on the plant side. We kind of know it needs to be non-slip, and we know it should be grooved, and we know a lot of these things about flooring, but if we think about at the plant, the number of animals that go across those floors daily, they wear down quite a bit. If we're diligent and we have the right maintenance plan, we can kind of keep up with that. But I would say maintenance is something that I think lacks sometimes in plants. Just because of the magnitude of things, you know, a gate hinge breaks and you have to have a maintenance guy come out and fix that. So I think flooring is a thing to look at quite a bit. I think lighting, which was mentioned before, is also a big deal. And I think sometimes when we're looking at an environment, we kind of think about it from our perspective. But I think, as has been mentioned, it's really important to kind of think about it from the pig's perspective and the pig's eye view, which I think we sometimes don't do.
So you aren't getting on your hands and knees, but you are looking at their level.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, Temple does that, but I don't do that as much. I think, you know, if we think about sensation and perception of pigs, I mean, humans in general use vision kind of primarily. And so, you know, we gravitate towards that because that's what we do all day long. But when you think about pigs, it's probably more hearing and smell. It's not like they don't use their vision. But I think in environments that are loud, it's hard to kind of pick out what's impacting from a auditory standpoint. And then smell, I don't even think we really think about, right? I mean, smell is kind of like overloaded in certain scenarios, and adjusting that is rather challenging. So I think just kind of holding still and listening and pretending we're a pig, getting down on all fours, if that makes sense, I think is something we need to do a little bit more of.
The pigs just don't see as well, period. Mm-hmm. And that therein is the challenge, because we can see in a much lower light level and the pig doesn't. And then when a pig does use his smell, I mean, we've all seen them. They stop, first thing to do, snout down. What is this? You know, they see a drain. I mean, getting rid of the distractions. You know, if we could offer the pig the perfect path, we could open the gate and they'd load themselves. Mm-hmm. But we don't have that much freedom to operate. So we've got to adapt, but you know, good lighting, no distractions are keys. And the traction, the biggest area that we fail is in our chutes. Not that they don't have cleats properly spaced in the right size, which is about every 8 inches and about a 1 inch tall for market pigs, but there's one broken or two missing. And the pigs start up and they slip. When they slip, they don't feel secure, so they stop. And right when we don't want them to stop, they're stopping. And it's because, hey, I'm slipping, I don't feel comfortable, I'm not sure I can keep going. Until we add enough pressure that they overcome their doubts and go up anyway. So I think that's probably the most common thing I see in farms that we just really, you know, especially if you're not using, you don't use it every day. And okay, you remember it after you're already loading again, and it's you know, getting it stopped and fixed right is it's not that hard, but it takes time, it takes planning, and that's, you know, just like in the plants, you know, that those little maintenance things get past us, and then it costs us in the end.
So chute, by its very nature, is definitely the eye of a needle. They've got to walk through there. Tell me about trucks. Are our trucks designed the way they should be? I mean, this is how they've always been. Not always, but when I see a potbelly, I know, okay, that's a truck full of pigs. Or do we need to reconsider that?
Well, I think we've gotten away from the potbelly considerably in the last 10 years or so, and rightfully so. Putting pigs down in that third level in the pot, they might go in there, but they were not fun to get out. And there's a lot of challenges with that. Sure, you can handle more pigs, but you know, we've gone to a lot of straight deck trucks, or basically hauling pigs in a cattle trailer. So oftentimes you see the pot, but it's still only two decks, not the full three. So from a worker just getting able to get in there, unload, it's a whole lot easier with a little more headroom. And as we've gotten these bigger pigs, a little more headroom's not a bad thing for them either. So I think we're getting a whole lot better on the trucking world.
So, and door size, we're okay?
I think in general, our trucks are well designed for the ones in particular designed, the new ones. The ramps, the internal ramps, have a much lower angle than they once did. The one question, the one kind of unknown still, because I've talked to several manufacturers, is what's the airflow inside the truck? Nobody can tell me. No one has. Iowa State, I think there was some research done, some modeling done with the scale model, trying to look at airflow. But even that didn't give us a lot of information. I've challenged a couple of manufacturers I've visited with at various trade events. Give us some numbers. Tell us what our airflow is inside there, because when we get into hot weather, that's critical. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not what we think it would be, but like Brandon said, the pots, very seldom do you see one that, if it shows up, that actually still has pigs in the pot. The other thing is not as much the truck design, is our use of it as far as load density. I think we still tend to overload the trucks. We still tend to put too many in. Trying to get economy, it has a negative impact on our welfare and occasionally on our meat quality, just due to the stress that we've added there after we've already had a series of stressful events to get them onto the truck.
Yeah, I would add, I think there's been a lot of progress too on the flip side when they get to the plant and unloading. I think people have done a much better job of having, you know, certain size groups that they're pulling off, and it's kind of almost, I would say, sometimes it's probably audited. You know, you're only going to take X number off at a time. You're going to move small groups. I've seen some plants even kind of designate an unloading technician. So whether or not they unload, they kind of assist and do the audits in that area. So I think it's like a heightened awareness of the importance of that. And so I think, you know, managing what we have has been a great area of progress.
Yeah, I'll fully agree with that. There's been a huge emphasis at the plant upon receiving and unloading animals and getting them to the pens quickly, efficiently, and stress-free. Starting with, you know, the elimination of the use of hot shots to unload the truck, through the animal handling, animal well-being specialists like Lily was talking about, and which is a function of audits and other things. But just that overall heightened awareness has really made a huge benefit.
It's Best Pig Handling Practices Part 2 on The Squeal with Colorado State's Dr. Lily Edwards and PIC's Chuck Boer and Brandon Fields. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.